This is Here and Now. I'm Jeremy Hobson, broadcasting today from Yellowstone National Park as the National Park Service celebrates 100 years of existence. Jonathan Jarvis is the 18th director of the Park Service. He's been in the job since 2009, but has been in the Park Service for more than three decades. I asked him, how would he describe the health of the parks right now?
Well, we're very healthy in terms of connecting to the American people. We hosted 312 million visitors in 2015, and I think we'll actually break that record this year. We're chronically underfunded to take care of the extraordinary number of visitors and extraordinary number of amazing places that we manage. So it's a good, bad, and ugly components.
Why are you so underfunded?
Well, we manage some 80-plus million acres in 412 sites that range from American Samoa to the Virgin Islands to grand places like Yosemite and Yellowstone to the Statue of Liberty and the Lincoln Memorial. All of those places require ongoing maintenance and care, plus the day-to-day use of cleaning up after millions of visitors and providing basic services like search and rescue and firefighting and the like. And that takes an appropriation, and we've been basically flat for about a decade in terms of federal appropriations.
But why is that? If you've got so many people in this country going and visiting the parks, why can't you and they convince their representatives that it makes sense to fund the Park Service to the tune that it actually needs? I mean, right now we're looking at, just for the maintenance backlog, billions of dollars.
Well, that's our goal, is for the American people to understand that in order to maintain these facilities and to provide for visitor enjoyment, it requires an annual appropriation. And frankly, I like to say we're a perpetuity organization on an annual appropriation, and that makes it very difficult to really meet the mission responsibilities of the agency. So part of it is to help the public understand that and ask for their assistance, both in terms of advocacy as well as philanthropic and volunteer support and constituent building as well.
But you have had some trouble, haven't you? I've seen you talk about this with the kind of government is bad mantra in Washington. And even though people may like the parks and hate other aspects of government, you're suffering because of that.
I think we are. I think there is a general attitude about reducing government spending, cutting back on the services that we provide the American people. And what I've been trying to show through the centennial is that the National Park Service represents the really best of America. We have the best places, the most important places to our natural history and our cultural history, and they require some basic level of support. And convincing Congress to do that is part of our long-term goal.
So you mentioned philanthropy, and there's been some criticism of that, not the individuals who have given, and there are certainly people who have given a lot of money to the National Park Service, but the corporations that have given, for example, Subaru has had its name plastered on park vehicles as part of a gift that they have given. Do you have any problem with that kind of thing?
Well, corporate support of the national parks really began in 1916. The railroads built some of our major lodges and were partners with us. In our 50th anniversary, some of your listeners will remember See the USA in your Chevrolet. Hmm. That was a partnership with the automobile industry. So we've had a long-term relationship with corporate America. And frankly, we're not selling out. We're not renaming the national parks after a corporate interest. But we are open to working with them in partnership to market the parks, but not in a way that is offensive or feels like that the parks have been commercialized.
So what's the line that you can't cross?
Well, there are a lot of lines you can't cross that we draw very clearly with corporate America. I mean, obviously, they would love to have, in some cases, their name, stuck on something that is a prominent feature. But at the same time, they're smart about it. They know that this is the core of Americana, and It would be inappropriate to rename a feature or a national park after a corporate interest, no matter how much money they gave us. So
we won't be seeing Old Faithful brought to you by Dasani water or something like that.
No way.
No. The Park Service has also been dealing with some sexual harassment issues. There was news recently about widespread abuse at Grand Canyon National Park. Why do you think that went on for so long without you or anyone else at the top knowing that the culture there was allowing that?
Well, the National Park Service is a big organization. We have 22,000 employees. We were unaware of this issue until it was brought directly to our attention via the investigation. And we have addressed it very aggressively at not only the Grand Canyon, but to ensure that it is not happening anywhere else in the system. And I don't, you know, while the issue itself and these incidents are horrific and should never be tolerated, we're getting on top of it with a number of very aggressive actions.
So with all of these things that we've been talking about, what do you think is the biggest challenge facing the parks right now?
Well, I would categorize it in two buckets. I think going into our second century, I worry a lot about the effects of climate change to the national parks. We're already seeing signs of glaciers disappearing from places like Glacier National Park or Joshua Trees from Joshua Tree. These are the essential resources upon which these parks were established, and they are essentially threatened by the results of climate change. That's one big category, and the other is really relevancy. You know, the last thing that I want to have in our second century is that the American public are apathetic about their national parks, that they don't feel that they tell their story. So our centennial initiative around Find Your Park and Let's Move Outside are all around connecting this next generation to their national parks.
And on that score, do you think enough has been done to get minorities interested in going to the parks?
Well, we certainly have had a very strong initiative in that area right now, reaching out to communities of color, reaching out to youth-serving organizations like Boys and Girls Clubs, also adding to the portfolio of the National Park Service by new parks that tell a more complex narrative, new places like Cesar Chavez in California or Harriet Tubman in Maryland and New York. Even our most recent site, which is the Stonewall Inn in New York City, right, that tells the LGBTQ story.
Well, and I have to say, I was out at Zion National Park earlier this year, which was incredible. But I did notice that a lot of the visitors were foreign visitors. They weren't Americans. How do you feel about that? Because on the one hand, I thought as I saw that and I interacted with people, oh, this is so cool. All these people have come from all over the world to see our parks. On the other hand, I thought, why aren't there more Americans here?
Well, the national parks are probably one of the top draws for international visitors to the United States. And so from a straight economic standpoint, that's a good thing. We love to have visitors come to the United States from around the world because they bring and contribute to the American economy. On the second hand, though, we want the visitation to the parks of the United States to be representative of the American demographic. At this point, it's not. So reach out and connecting with this more diverse community is one of our goals of the centennial.
We found a park in the Arctic Circle called Kobuk Valley. There are no roads in or out. It is one of the least visited parks in the system. Now, of course, not every park can be as popular as Yellowstone or the Grand Canyon. But what do you think is the most underrated park in the system?
Wow. We have a lot of sort of obscure parks, parks that people don't probably even know about. But
have you been to all of them at this point, by the way?
I have not.
Oh, okay.
You know, so there's 412. I've been to maybe 300 in my total career. I will talk a little bit about Wrangell St. Elias since it's a park that I worked in Alaska. It's the largest park in the system. It's 13 million acres. It's roughly the size of West Virginia or Switzerland. You know, Denali gets all the attention because of the big mountain, but Wrangell's has really big mountains too, and glaciers and grizzly bears and caribou and moose and wolves and big rivers. And it's like, I like to say it looks like the United States as it came out of the Pleistocene. Hmm. It's still an incredible place.
What drew you to this job when you were young?
Well, I loved being outside. I just loved being out in nature as a kid. I think that was in the days when, you know, your parents kicked you out of the house and then, you know, come back in when it gets dark. And that's the way I grew up. And so I was lucky enough right out of college to land a seasonal job with the National Park Service here in Washington, D.C., on the National Mall, the Bicentennial Information Center. And I really loved the mission of the service, this public service agency that was committed to protecting and interpreting these incredible places. So I fell in love with the mission and have stayed with it for 4 decades.
And you've ended up walking the halls of Congress now as the director of the National Park Service. You don't even get the perk of being able to be based in some awesome park.
Well, I had my turn out there. I lived in some incredible places, Crater Lake, Guadalupe Mountains, North Cascades. And then, you know, somebody's got to come back to Washington and do battle for this place, this mission. And I was ready to do that.
That's Jonathan Jarvis, the director of the National Park Service. Director Jarvis, thank you so much.
Well, thank you, Jeremy. I really appreciate it.
And again, I'm here at Yellowstone National Park today. Old Faithful still steaming in front of me. I've been tweeting some photos at Jeremy Hobson on Twitter. Check them out.